Far, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zimmer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Lisa Teal, who's serving as our worship associate, our interim director of religious education, Karen Labracco, our music director, Hal Walker, and a number of wonderful musicians who participate in the music ministries of this congregation. I'd like to let you know that we reached a milestone as a congregation this week after several years of working toward the goal. The Green Sanctuary team was able to submit our application for candidacy as a Green Sanctuary congregation. This was an effort that involved many, many people. We made this commitment in 2009 as a congregation, and since then, we have had a wide range of activity, intentional eating, study group, efforts to combat fracking, gardening, participating in the greening of the library and social hour, pledging to be an earth steward, signing cards for Congress, writing love letters to the earth, making rain barrels, attending symposia on climate change. Thank you, and we want to give special thanks to the Green Sanctuary team and an extra special thanks to its convener, Mary Lou Holly. Kate Coomerly will read our chalice lighting this morning.
For sleepless nights avoiding the curfew breakers, for anxious hours as a driving instructor,
for hours spent on sidelines cheering, and for watching school plays, sometimes resting our eyes, for the pressures of breadwinning, and wait until your father gets home, for teaching moments and mentoring moments, for making up answers when you just don't know, but are expected to because you know everything, for scrapes and boo-boo kisses and band-aids, for hugs and kisses and silliness and play, for bedtime stories and early morning ice time, for all the aftershave and ties received as gifts, for handing over car keys and waving goodbye, for father-daughter wedding dances, and cradling grandchildren for the first time. For all the moments and all the meaning in the role of a lifetime, we light our chalice for fathers and for fatherhood.
I do believe in simplicity. It is astonishing as well as sad how many trivial affairs even the wisest thinks he must attend to in a day, how singular an affair he thinks he must omit. When the mathematician would solve a difficult problem, he first frees the equation of all encumbrances and reduces it to its simplest terms. So simplify the problem of life. Distinguish the necessary and the real. Probe the earth to see where your main roots run. Come, let us worship together and explore what simplicity might mean.
This Sunday, we switch our religious education programming to our summertime programming, and this year, our children and youth will be exploring places around the world, religions and cultures around the world through the World Travelers Program, and they need more time to be able to do their exploration together, so in the summertime, we will not have a time for all ages, and instead, we will sing our children out at this point in the service. But today I would like to let you know that we are going to be saying a temporary farewell to our interim director of religious education, Karen Labracco. Karen will be on hiatus over the next several weeks until she returns on August 14th. And on that day, we will be saying our goodbyes to Karen and our hellos to our new permanent director of religious education, whose name is Lily Rappaport. And she'll be moving here from Connecticut this summer to start in August. So we're looking forward to welcoming Lily. And in the meantime, we're looking forward to being led by Colleen Taylor, who is receiving a promotion to our religious education coordinator. And so we're looking forward to her leadership this summer, and then she'll continue working with Lily when Lily arrives. Today, it is our privilege to witness the dedication of a family to a child, and in so doing, renew our dedication to all the children of the world. Let us join together in the spirit of gratitude and of hope. By what name is this child known?
Catherine May Hovancic. Catherine means pure and innocent, and May is derived from a Greek word that means midwife and a Latin word that means she who is great. We chose the name Catherine May because we both loved it, but it also happens to be the name of my paternal grandmother's twin sister, who died as an infant. Besides her brother Benjamin, Catherine has three older siblings who passed away, two who were miscarried early, and a brother named Paul, who died an hour after he was born, a year before Benjamin. We were glad to choose a name that honors the memory of a family member, especially a baby whose parents did not want her to be forgotten, just as we do not want our babies who passed away to be forgotten. Catherine, we are so happy you have joined our family, but we will never forget your three older siblings, and we will continue to honor their memory.
May we name you as your parents have named you. May you always know who you are and that you belong.
Mike and Stephanie have prepared promises to Catherine, and they will share them with her and with us.
Catherine, you are one of the greatest blessings of my life. I waited so long for you with no promise that you would ever come to me. Choosing to become pregnant for the fifth time and have a baby at age 45 was one of the scariest things I have ever done, and I am so glad I found the courage to persist. You reward me every day for overcoming fear and uncertainty and for opening myself up to the possibility of another heartbreaking loss. The journey of bringing you into this world has been one of the most challenging and rewarding endeavors of my life, and I will never stop being grateful for the opportunity God has given me to love and nurture you. My love for you is boundless and unconditional. My desire to share with you all that is good and worthy in life knows no limits. I will do my best to give back to you in turn the joy you bring to my life each day. You are teaching me so much about love and patience and commitment. I see that this is the way it is meant to be between parents and children. I learn from you so that I can teach you what I have learned, and you can then teach it to others. One of the most important gifts I can give to you is to always love and respect your father and honor my commitment to our marriage, so you will always feel the safety and comfort of belonging to a family that remains intact no matter what challenges we face. I will do my best to maintain the delicate balance between protecting you from harm while allowing you the freedom you need to become the person God meant you to be. I will do my best to teach you compassion, empathy, mercy, and humility so you will be gentle, and generosity, faith, gratitude, courage, and forgiveness so you will be strong. I will try to teach these virtues not just by my words, but also by my example. As you grow, I want you to know that you are not only our child, but our whole family's child, this church's child, and God's child, that you may spread this love to others.
Catherine, you've already changed our lives in profound ways. We look forward to all the many challenges and joys ahead. There are many promises built into the role of being your father. Here are three of them. I promise to expose you to a wide array of facts and ideas while respecting your choices as you decide which ones you want to pursue and which ones you want to reject. I promise to engage you with family, friends, and the church community that has enriched our lives for so many years. I promise that all the things I do to embarrass you as a teenager will be useful to you as an adult. There will be many other promises along the way, too numerous to list. Overall, I will commit to living those promises as I watch your life unfold in ways that I cannot even imagine today.
And Benny, as her big brother, you are a very important person in Catherine's life. Will you promise to play with her and watch out for her and help her learn as she grows up?
Yes.
Wonderful. So glad to hear that. And will Catherine's family please stand? Each of you has a unique and significant relationship with Catherine. To you, she will look for guidance and affection, encouragement and understanding. Will you dedicate yourselves in love to nurture and promise to support Stephanie and Mike in their role as parents? If so, please say we will. Thank you. As members and friends of this congregation, we too have a share in this dedication. Will you recommit yourselves to the vision of a religious community in which all children are welcome and promise to do your part in the creation of a world in which all children may thrive? If you so pledge, please say, "We will."
Catherine, you are precious. On this day of dedication, we offer you blessings that you may always remember the blessing that you are. We bless you with earth. We bless you with earth that you may always know the safe embrace of home. May you respect and care for your body and know it as a good and precious gift. We bless you with air. May you feel your feelings. In your life, you will know joy and sorrow, satisfaction and disappointment. May you feel these feelings too, and know that they are also good and precious gifts. We bless you with fire. May the flames of inspiration ever burn bright in your mind and kindle in you a love of learning and curiosity. We bless you with water, the source from which all life springs. May you always be open to the streams of wonder and creativity that run through your spirit. And we bless you with this rose. May your life unfold in beauty.
Bless you with our voices. And now, if you could rise in body or spirit and speak together the words of blessing printed in your order of service. Catherine, we welcome you. May you never unlearn your sweet gentleness. May you win no victory which harms yourself or another. May you keep tame that which rages dangerous between us all. May you ask for forgiveness openly and grant it often. May you respect yourself and envy none, remembering always who you are. May you know good teachers all the days of your life, honoring their vision, walking forward in their name. May you feel compassion for all living things, and by your actions, lessen the tide of human sorrow. May you abide always in trust, resting in the spirit of life that embraces us all. May you sing your own song, knowing great joy, great peace, and great love. Amen.
One of my colleagues, Lynn Cox, wrote a prayer for a vigil this week for the victims of Orlando. And I invite you to join with me now in this prayer. Spirit of life and love, known by many names and yet fully known by none, be with us in this time of grief. Be with us as we reach out to one another in comfort. Be with us as we come to terms with our sadness, anger, and despair. Hold us in the embrace of internal love, even when we forget our connections with each other and with our deepest selves. Spark of mystery, illuminate our memories of those who have died. Call to our minds and hearts the love and passion and creativity they wove as their legacy during their two short lifetimes. Be present with their parents, their partners, their lovers, their friends, their families of all kinds as they mourn. Bless the caregivers who tend to the survivors and lay the dead to rest. Gather the spirits of the fallen into the brightest center of your heart, and there may they find peace. River of continuous presence and constant change, help us to find flowing sources of resilience. We give thanks for the traditions of art and music, and dance and passion and poetry that have sustained our ancestors in this struggle and that will sustain us as we move through our grief and into our shared future. Breath of renewal, bring us together in hope, healing, and action. Lead us to reach out to one another in comfort, in coalition building, in creativity, in calling for change. Hold us in our unity, celebrating life in many voices and singing together as one. Remind us to care for ourselves and for one another. We ask all of these things in the name of love and in the spirit of all the prophets and teachers who have led us to this moment. Amen. Today we are exploring simplicity, and Lisa and I have some reflections to share with you. But before we do, we'd like to bring your experience into our consciousness. And so I would invite you to consider for a moment what simplicity means to you. And then if you can find just a phrase, a couple of words to say what simplicity means to you, we'd love to have your voice in the room. Would anybody like to share? What does simplicity mean to you?
Stop thinking.
Distillation to essence.
Distillation to essence.
Back in the day.
Detachment.
Quiet.
Meditation.
A smile. TV off.
No drama.
Breath.
Less.
Paying attention to the important bits.
Pure love without expectation of reward.
Talk less, listen more.
Thank you all so much. Simplicity.
It seems ironic, but simplicity is not always easy. If you've ever glanced at the magazine Real Simple, anybody seen that? You may have been struck by the very lack of simplicity. This periodical is chock full of ads and articles on a whole lot of expensive equipment and experiences that you need to buy in order to help you lead a simpler life. From a very early age, I personally have been drawn to the idea of simplicity. I reveled in power outages as a child and still do now, having to make do without TVs and microwaves and instead playing old-fashioned board games by candlelight and quiet. Growing up Catholic, I also loved the Lenten season, sacrificing and giving up all our decadent indulgences until Easter. And the old Leave It to Beaver reruns enthralled me back in the day. I fantasized about living in these simpler times. As a young adult, I was working out in the business world, and I watched my peers getting caught up in a whirlwind of activity, jamming their calendars with events and trying to make more money to buy more things and have more experiences. And I can recall making a very conscious commitment in my 20s that life was going to be different for me. I left the rat race, went out on my own as a consultant. I had only one child and deliberately minimized my activities and commitments. I was determined to live a simpler life, the reward being calm and peace. Yet along the way, something happened. My life, my simple life, became harder to sustain. The days grew busier and busier with a school-aged child, a home to maintain, a business to run. I would create to-do lists and strive really hard to complete everything on that list so that eventually all would be done and I could just finally relax and life would be simple again. But a funny thing kept happening. As I crossed one item off, two more would find their way in. It took a while for me to realize that, in part, my definition of simplicity had somewhat mutated. I think I became a control freak. I was trying to fight entropy, that constant natural move towards change and chaos. For any dynamic living system to exist, there must be change. Change is the nature of nature. Stagnation is death. My commitment to having and doing less had become a means of trying to control my surroundings, a futile attempt at remaining in a state of continuity. So I've been inspired to redefine my view of simplicity and how I incorporate it into my life, based in part on some writings of a close student of Gandhi. His name is Richard Gregg. He wrote in 1936, "Simplicity is an ordering and a guiding of our energy and our desires, a partial restraint in some directions in order to secure greater abundance of life in other directions. It involves a deliberate organization of life for a purpose. Find out what is relevant to the purpose of your life." So simplicity is a way of deciding what is important to my goals and my purpose in life, and making conscious choices that best support that. I think a useful analogy is irrigation. If you want to get water to plants, you don't just open up the floodgates and hope a stream lands where you want it. You create a clear and deliberate path and tend carefully to the seeds that you have planted. Certainly, some general slowing down and minimizing clutter is necessary for clarity, but it's not so much limiting all activities and commitments. Rather, it is a matter of choosing those activities and commitments much more carefully.
The two worship services that I'm leading this month on the theme of simplicity turn out to be a lot like my life. I value simplicity in theory, but in practice, my life is not very simple. My particular challenge is not devotion to the acquisition of things, but rather devotion, apparently, to experiences, commitments that I have made. Between my family and friends, my work, both paid and volunteer, and my responsibility for all of the chores of life that I choose and that I must take, my schedule is quite complex. And I say this not as a badge of honor, but rather as an admission of one of my own learning edges. I see being overly busy and filled up with things, even good things, as one of the spiritual challenges of our society. And as the fullness of my life and the fullness of this worship service reveals, in untangling the knot of filling up with good things, I am still a beginner. And it doesn't help that our society worships the acquisitive spirit. We're constantly told that there is more to achieve, to get, to own, to do, to be. So next week's service, we'll look at some of the choices and skills that we can develop to help us loosen the grip of this message on our own lives. Our service today is less about how to find simplicity, but more about why. Why should we value simplicity? As Lisa so wisely observed, simplicity frees us from the press of demands and obligations so we can determine what is most important and direct our precious and limited life resources accordingly. Another way to say it is that simplicity is one of the paths to spiritual liberation. Quakers are among the faith traditions who prioritize this practice, this spiritual path of liberation through simplicity. Philip Gully is a contemporary Quaker who has written many testimonies about simplicity. He says that simplicity is an antidote to the emotional and financial stress that comes from living in a culture of acquisition. He observes that when we think about simplicity, many of us think about it as an all or nothing proposition. He encourages us to consider ways we can build moments of simplicity into our lives. And he suggests meal sharing as one way we can begin. He thinks that if we can find a way, even once a week, to invite some other people who also have full lives to prepare a meal with us, to collaborate in the preparing of a meal, and then to actually take the time to sit and enjoy that meal together, that is one way we can create a moment of simplicity. And that by creating these moments of simplicity, then we have a foundation to grow on, to build practices of simplicity throughout our lives. Zach Kersey is a Methodist, not a Quaker, but he would agree with this prescription wholeheartedly. He is a minister, who's also a farmer and a bread baker. He's what we call bivocational in ministry, so he's not full-time. He divides his work life between these three vocations, ministry, bread baking, and farming. And he started a church that he calls Simple Church. And this church is unlike any church that you may have seen before. They don't own a building. They don't have committees. They don't even have traditional worship services. Their experience of church is a lot like what Gully has suggested. People come together one night a week to prepare a meal lovingly, and many of the ingredients Kersey himself has grown. So the people come, they work together to prepare a meal and to set the table. At the table, they light candles, they sing songs, they pray. They have a short message which they discuss over their meal, and then they clean up together. That's church. It's focused on feeding the body and the spirit. Kersey says that practicing simplicity doesn't have to mean living with austerity. And he knows this because the food that he grows and helps to prepare creates abundance and beauty on their tables at Simple Church. Instead of austerity, he says, simplicity means focused. By simplifying our lives, we have more focus to give to the things that really matter. When life has gotten out of balance, as it does for all of us from time to time, simplicity can help us find our center again. When we're stressed out with too many demands and not enough time, simplicity can help us clarify our priorities. So I've been thinking about simplicity as the spiritual practice of learning when to say no. When we choose to set limits with no, we free ourselves to follow the deepest yeses. The deepest yeses of our hearts have more room to flourish when we learn how to say no to the right things. The spiritual practice of simplicity can help us deepen our connections with ourselves and with each other and with the holy, however we name or understand that mystery. Today we're celebrating the flower ceremony, which is a uniquely Unitarian Universalist ritual. The Reverend Dr. Norbert Chopek came up with this ceremony in 1923 in the Unitarian Church in Prague in Czechoslovakia. That congregation was very large, over 1,000 members, and it was made up of people who had, many of whom had formerly been Catholic and no longer resonated with the rituals of the Catholic Church. And so he wanted to find a ritual that would be really different from what people had previously experienced, but which they could celebrate together to have an experience of communion. And so he turned to the flowers. And he invited people one day in June to pick a flower on the way to church, any wild flower that appealed to them, or branch, flowering branch, and to bring it with them. And when they got there, they had a table set like we had one set with empty vases, and people simply brought their flowers forward. And together, they noticed that the bouquet of flowers is ever more vibrant for the diversity of the flowers that people brought. The flower ceremony is an experience of celebrating the power of many, the power of many voices, many experiences, many points of view, the power of the many and the one, the power of unity in diversity. Over the years, Unitarian Universalist congregations have adopted this ritual, and I would say most of them celebrate it now, this flower ceremony in the spring. And I think it's taken on a slightly different meaning in our time. As it's evolved, I think many of us have come to experience this ritual as one of the ways that we symbolize interdependence. The beauty and power of the symbol comes from its simplicity. Anybody can participate. There's nothing you need to buy. You simply must find a flower and bring it to church. And it doesn't require a whole lot of words or complex theological ideas. It simply invites us to spend time noticing the flowers and seeing what they might have to teach us. In the midst of the profound political and social divisions of our day, what this simple ritual says to me is that we're all connected. So may the flowers remind us once again of this fundamental truth. We are all connected. Will the ushers please come forward? Once each month, we take a special collection for an organization whose work we would like to support. And our special offering this morning goes to the Pulse Victims Fund for Equality Florida. Equality Florida consists of two organizations, the Equality Florida Institute and the Equality Florida Action Incorporation, which is an advocacy organization. The other is an educational charity. Together, these organizations form the largest civil rights organization dedicated to securing full equality for Florida's lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. And all of our undesignated offering this morning will be given to Equality Florida to aid the victims and the families of the terrible tragedy in Orlando.
Towards the light is striding, hold the iron touch of gold, winter time and frost time, seedlings working through the hole, now make a fertile sun. Bird and plant that winter long, slumbered at their leisure, now be stirring green and strong, finding growth their
flower while the flower carol was sung, so please do so before you leave today. At the end of our service, come take a different flower from the one you brought to take with you when you leave. As we go today, may we remember that the flowers can be our teachers. The flowers, the trees, the skies, the seas, the earth, and all that grows upon it. Everything can be our teacher, for we are all connected. Amen.